to Postcards to the Universe with Melissa Caprio. Do you believe in magic? What if you were told that all you had to do was get a little creative and work a magic spell to bring anything you can imagine into your life? Here on Postcards to the Universe, we will share manifesting, tips, postcards, creativity, abundance, and prosperity. Here is your host, Melissa Caprio.
Hello and welcome to Postcards to the Universe with Melissa, creating the life you crave. I hope everybody is doing well. How is everybody doing this beautiful November? It's a great time of the year, the holidays. I love it. I love it. I love it so much at this time. And we've actually been getting some, you know, people who listen to me a lot know I talk about the weather down here in Florida. We've been getting really nice weather. It's cool and breezy. So I just love that. So I am getting in the spirit. Today I have author Claire Goldsberry talking about her book, The Illusion of Life and Death, Mind, Consciousness, and Eternal Being. And she's going to be joining me here in just a few minutes. For those of you who are new to my show or you're tuning in for the first time, I am also an author and my book is titled Postcards to the Universe, Harness the Universe's Power and Manifest Your Dreams. And in my book, there are 30 manifesting stories along with photographs that I took of the contributors' manifesting postcards. I included their manifesting stories alongside the image. There's writing exercises to help you get clear on what you want to manifest and a toolbox full of fun exercises on how to manifest love, money, health, career, and so much more. If you're interested in doing inner work exercises and reading people's incredible journeys of transformation, inspiration, and manifesting, please go to your favorite bookstore and you can purchase a copy. Each week, I share on Mondays a Magic Monday message. It's an image of a manifesting postcard that I photograph with an affirmation. And I like to focus on that affirmation for the week. I tap into the energy of that affirmation and keep repeating it to myself to increase its power to become a new belief that I incorporate into my life. And this week's Magic Monday message is funny. I thought this one was kind of funny and witty. And it's, we are all mad here. The best people are. So what does that mean? We're all mad here. It's a quote from Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland, and the character, the Mad Hatter, is saying that everyone is unique or weird, if you want to use that word, in their own way. And I believe your uniqueness is your magic. So ask yourself how you would like to use your unique magic. Once you really get how unique you are, it's like a light is turned on inside. Suddenly you understand that you have something to offer that is magic. It doesn't have to be a world changer. You don't have to design a way to clean the planet of trash. But if you do, that's awesome. I can't wait to see it. I couldn't do that. Your magic may be something that's only seen by a select few, but the ripple effect from that is not small. Don't think it is. The interconnections on this planet are huge. Small things create large effects. You may not even see how your magic plays out, but it may be the only way it can manifest is because it came from you. What we want to do is see ourselves the way we were created, as the precious and unique soul that we are. To know that in every part of our being, down to our bones, that this is true. Like anything else, it takes constantly reminding ourselves of this fact. You can't let up. If you make mistakes, it doesn't matter. If you feel depressed, it doesn't matter. If you can't get out of bed, it doesn't matter. If you get sick or injured and others must take care of you, it still doesn't matter. It's just because you are, and that is the only reason. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to be a world leader. You don't have to be a talented rock star. You don't have to be a doctor or a healer. You don't have to volunteer to a charity. You don't have to be famous. You don't have to have children. You don't have to go to college or even be educated. You are every color and race. You are a woman or a man, or you don't identify with either, or you identify with both. You are special needs or you are not. You are young or old. You are tall or short. You are healthy or sick, and you can be kind or not. You can be a Democrat or a Republican or an independent. None of it matters. All you have to do is be you. So to see the images of the magic messages with the affirmations, you can go to my website, Postcards to the Universe, or any of my social media platforms, which is all under Postcards to the Universe, and I post them each week. And if you're on Facebook and you want to join a fun Facebook group that's uplifting and light, I have one called Postcards of Love, where we share inspirational images and stories. Okay, so I wanted to mention as a support that author, the number one New York Times bestseller of The Book of Awakening, beloved poet, teacher, and storyteller Mark Nepo, who I had on my May 26 show, is offering. It's an amazing interview, by the way, and it's in the archive, so please check it out. He is offering a 3-session webinar this November called The Fire of Aliveness, Coming Back into the World. And the dates are the 21st, November 21st, November 28th, December 5th, this year from 1 to 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And Mark says, we are cast into a totally new flow when the pandemic hit. And now that we are emerging, we face challenges in returning to life after such a long solitude. The Fire of Aliveness focuses on how we can cross the threshold from solitude back into relationship with ease and grace. It's been a deep journey, and here we are, ready for new life to emerge. The link, if you're interested, is live, L-I-V-E, .marknepo.com. And Mark is such an inspiration, and I wanted to share this amazing and very affordable webinar to help guide us back into the world. Next week, I have guest Victoria Gallagher, and she's a worldwide leader in hypnotherapy, a best-selling author, international speaker, life success coach, and renowned authority on the law of attraction. She has dedicated her life to empowering people all over the world to successfully live a life of liberty aligned with their dreams through her effective meditative recordings and online courses. And she has a popular law of attraction show called The Power of Your Mind podcast. So join me next week for that. All right. So to get to my guest today, I'm very excited to talk about this subject. Claire Goldsberry's latest book, The Illusion of Life and Death, Mind, Consciousness, and Eternal Being, helps readers understand, quote, the end of this lifetime is as important and miraculous as the beginning. It's truly a time to celebrate the life and the death of a person, end quote. Sharing the wisdom and knowledge of the ancient sages, spiritual teachers like the Buddha, drawing from her insights as a Buddhist practitioner, her studies of Christianity, ageless wisdom, Hinduism, and her partner's cancer journey, she provides a profound view of living and dying as seen through the ages by those who have sought answers regarding the most mysterious aspect of life. Her book is arranged in 4 sections: What is life, illness, old age, and death? Looking deeper into death, and finally, what happens after death? The Illusion of Life and Death covers topics such as karma and reincarnation, suffering, living consciously, understanding consciousness and reality, the mind, and learning to embrace what is non-attachment versus detachment, the business of illness, and the cost of keeping us alive, as well as dying with grace and dignity, and even discusses suicide. You want to find out more about her? You can go to her website. It's claregoldsberry.com, C-L-A-R-E-G-O-L-D-S. B-E-R-R-Y.com. Welcome, Claire. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Melissa. I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me about the book. I'm excited.
Good. Yeah, it's very, I'm trying to find the right word. It's very impactful. Impactful.
Exciting.
Yeah, it's very impactful and it's very rich. And so why don't you share a little bit about, you know, your background and what brought you to write the book?
Well, I've always been a student of religion and religious studies, spiritual traditions, and have had a varied path through religions and spiritual traditions. And when I came up on Buddhism, it gave me a lot of answers to questions that I'd had since childhood. And one of the questions I think that all human beings have is surrounding the mystery of death. What happens when we die? And how do we die? I don't think I was ever even told anything about death or dying until I took up practicing Buddhism in the mid-1990s. And it was the first time that I was actually instructed to remember death, always remember death, that it was a key to learning how to live well. And I began seeing death and life in a very different light. And it was a good thing, because when I met my significant other, Brent, in 1995, I didn't know at the time, but I was in for an amazing path that would not only call me to look deeper spiritually into life and death, but to actually have realizations about it that I never thought I could have before. And I think we need in the West to learn how to die better. I've often thought that the Eastern traditions, they seem to die better than we do in the West. And so I wrote the book with all of these components of Brent's cancer diagnosis, of the ageless wisdom, the Eastern philosophies. I wrote it to provide this kind of a broad-based look at what is living and what is dying, and how we can do both better.
Mm. Yeah, and I thought it was amazing because you talk about Brent in the book and about how his perspective when he got the diagnosis, and which was kind of amazing, sort of, you know, the way he sort of handled, you know, what was given to him and what he was going to do with the rest of the time that he had, which I thought you really described well.
Thank you. Yes, he described it as an adventure, just another of life's adventures, you know. And I guess people found that a little bit odd to describe a terminal diagnosis as an adventure. But that's kind of the way he looked at life. He didn't really have a specific religious or spiritual outlook on life. He just sort of had always lived his life the way he wanted to live it. And he enjoyed everything about his life. And there were no judgments. This is bad. That's good. He never seemed to battle anything. Things just sort of went along and turned out like they did. And I'd never known anybody like him before, actually, that could just embrace everything. And even little things he would say, and I would go, well, you know, that sounds very Buddhist, what you just said. He goes, really? He said, well, I don't know anything about Buddhism. He said, that's just what I think. So I think some people maybe are just natural, I guess you could call them natural Buddhists or natural spiritual people that can tune into these things without having been brought up in a specific way, in a specific religion or spiritual tradition, which I think they're very lucky, because sometimes being a seeker can be exhausting if you take it far enough.
Yeah. Right. It's true. It's true. It can be. Yeah, because like you said, in Western society, we are not prepared to handle death. You know, nobody prepares us. There's no, even if you, like you said, even if you're with somebody or you know somebody or somebody you love has a terminal illness and you know they're going to die, the way we handle it is we don't know what to do. And right. There's such a fear around it. And you talk a lot about that fear, and you say fear of death needs to be overcome to be able to live our best life. So how do we do that?
Well, I think one of the keys to that is practices such as impermanence and non-attachment, which kind of go together. All things are impermanent. Everything that is created, even every experience, every relationship is impermanent. And I think that the problem is in the West, we tend to go at things as if everything is permanent. Everything is what it is, and it's going to stay what it is forever and ever. And we attach to this idea of permanence, and that ultimately leads to suffering, because we always find out that everything is impermanent. Nothing lasts. Mm-hmm. And that's not a bad thing. An acorn can't become an oak tree unless the acorn dies to what it is, an acorn, to become an oak tree. And so I think that we learn that everything is impermanent, all is change, all is mutable, and to be able to embrace that change and to be able to see that out of all this change, it doesn't have to be negative. It can be very positive experiences, but things will change. And we have to learn to embrace that, because if we expect everything just to stay exactly the way we want it, it's never going to happen. And we suffer because of that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. We do. And we know for sure there's two things. What do they say? The two things that you know for sure is death and taxes, right?
Yeah, like
you,
right.
Everything else is. Right. So learning how to approach death is, I think, really very significant. And you talk about it in helping us to learn how to live well by learning how to die well, which we're going to talk about when we come back, because we're up at our first break. So let's take our break here, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk more about this. Very, very fascinating. So stay tuned. Hi, I'm Melissa Caprio from Postcards to the Universe, creating the life you crave. Do you believe in magic? What if I told you all you had to do was get a little creative and work a dream spell to bring anything you can imagine into your life? Well, guess what? I've got the spell for you. Postcards to the Universe, a global movement for manifestation, is a casting magical tool for you to use whenever you want. How does living in passion sound to you? Join me in my movement where you get to create in the magical playground. Let's think outside the box and do some playful conjuring. By casting out our desires with a manifesting postcard, we explore our hearts and allow the alchemy of our dreams to appear. And don't forget to tune in each week here on Om Times Radio with my show, Postcards to the Universe, Creating the Life You Crave at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. I share tips on creativity, abundance, and prosperity, and you will be introduced to the coolest guests, trailblazers, mystics, and creatives who enrich our lives. So if you're just joining me today, I have author Claire Goldsberry on talking about her book, The Illusion of Life and Death, Mind, Consciousness, and Eternal Being. So Claire, you say, which I thought was really interesting, learning to live well helps us learn to die well. Can you share what you mean by that?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with this whole idea of fear. And and what fear can do to us. Fear really is, fear is a huge obstacle. Mm-hmm. And if we know how to live well, we know how to die well. And if we're not afraid to live, we're not afraid to die. Mm-hmm. That's the big lesson that Brent taught me. You can't be afraid of death and live your best life. You just can't. And I think that was a very important lesson that he taught me, and that I try to help people understand. Obviously, we don't know a lot about death. It's one of those mysteries that for eons. But yet, once you learn how to live well, you'll know how to die well. And when you're not fearful of death, you can live your best life.
So what do you mean by what is a good death?
Well, that term is used a lot, as I discovered, in the in the Eastern philosophies. Mm-hmm. And a good death is really about living in a fearless way so that we can die fearlessly. A good death is one without fear. It's learning to embrace what is, and not cling so tightly to life. Again, this attachment to my body, my life, my material possessions. I think that people are afraid most of all of losing their bodies. Will I still exist if I do not have this vehicle, this body? And I think that's the thing that bothers people the most, because we identify so strongly with our bodies.
We do with who we are, right? With our ego, with that who we are, that's how we identify.
Exactly. And attachment is just wrapped up in the ego. That's the reason, when I say non-attachment allows us to get the ego out of it, and to allow it to be. And I think that that's a very important, important point in learning to die fearlessly, is to not be afraid of who we are and who is the I that will continue after I've left this vehicle I call my body.
Yeah, that's perfect, because my next question was going to be, what do we know about life after death?
Well, not much. I think we all seek for these answers. You know, everybody wants answers. Mm-hmm. Well, I have a question and I need the answers. And when it comes to life after death, it was kind of interesting one evening in a Buddhist class, we were talking about this subject, and somebody actually asked that question. Well, you know, come on, what do we really know about life after death? And our teacher said, virtually nothing. So we're sort of fortunate in that we have near-death experiences. Mm-hmm. We have the medical means to bring people back from the brink of death, or what they call death. And they come back and they can tell us what they saw, what they experienced. And a lot of these people who have NDEs always say that they will never be afraid of death, that it taught them that there is something, and maybe that something has more to do with what you are expecting, maybe your expectations about what your life after death will be, or what your future lives will be. Has a lot to do with it, because, you know, we all create our own life in our own mind. Everything is created in the mind by the mind, and nothing has any inherent reality from its own side. So I think that what we believe and what we expect has a lot to do with what we ultimately will experience. So it could be different for everybody. But there is something. I've known people that did not even believe in life after death who, you know, when this one woman was dying and she was telling me, well, you know, I don't believe in life after death. So I wish all those people that keep visiting me every night would just go away.
Oh, my God.
It's like, gee, well, maybe.
Oh, that's so funny. Wow.
That was. She was a hoot. Yeah, she did not believe in life after death. When you're dead, you're gone. There's nobody else, you know. But she just wished all those people that kept visiting her every night would just stop, you know.
So. That's incredible. That's incredible. So you talk about reincarnation. So if we reincarnate, then do we ever really die?
No, I don't think we ever really die in the way we think of death, which we think of it as a finality. I think that it's just a change. I think we experience little deaths every day. You know, our bodies are constantly changing. You know, our cells change. Old cells die, new cells appear. You know, our hair goes from dark to gray. Everything changes. And I think that we need to understand that change is all part of it. And I think that how we die, we experience these little deaths every day. We're just not aware of them. So death ultimately is about change to a large degree. It's about change from being manifest in a physical vehicle by which we identify ourselves and we look in the mirror into, you're still manifest. You're just not manifest in a specific physical vehicle. Doesn't mean that there won't be a new physical vehicle in which you can become manifest.
Yeah. Have you been studying into reincarnation? I mean, do you, I feel like I know the answer that you're going to say when I ask you, do you feel you're going to see Brent again? And I feel like you're going to say, yes, of course I am. Like that you believe that, but I'm answering for you. So first, do you believe you'll see him again?
Well, it's interesting because I think I will encounter the entity that was Brent in this life.
Right.
Now, will that entity, even in dreams, just for example, I will dream about people I know. They do not look like the person, the physical person. And yet I know that is Jimmy, for example.
Yes. I have those
even though,
too.
Yeah,
they're wild. They're wild. Yes. Yeah, they're wild. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it's sort of like that. It's just like when Brent and I met, we had this connection, like we could finish each other's sentences. It was weird, like we'd known each other before. And I think it's kind of like that. Will I know him because he looks exactly like the Brent when he was in this physical body on this particular space-time continuum? No. But we will know. You will know.
Yeah. Yeah. I love thinking that. And that gives me a lot of comfort. I personally, when people say they believe that when you die, that's it, I always feel a little bad, for that they don't have this. Because I take a lot of comfort in believing that I would be reunited with the souls that I loved, and that we've probably reincarnated many times together in many lives to work out whatever we need to work out. So,
yeah. And I've heard too that we tend to stay in family groups to a lot of extent. I've had some other experiences with my own children. To do with, reincarnation and the family groups. I won't go into it here, but yeah, I do think that we make those connections over and over.
Yeah, I think so too. Of course, we're just speculating here. We don't know for sure.
Right. No, and it's all based on experiences that I've had, questions that I had that I felt like I got the answer to. Not going to be the answer for everybody. But I always tell people, the questions are always more important than the answers. If perchance you get an answer, then embrace it and see how it works. It may not be the answer, but it may be an answer for you at this moment, which is good too.
Yeah. And you talk about in your book that you're practicing Buddhist. So for those who are not familiar, how do Buddhists view death? And how is that, different than, say, the way Christians view it in understanding death on a visceral level?
Well, I think the biggest difference is in the Eastern traditions, whether you're talking Hinduism, Buddhism, and I can't say that I'm like a pure Buddhist, but that's what I ground my beliefs in. I think that the biggest difference is in the Eastern traditions, there is not just one life, this one mm-hmm. life only. In Christianity, and I was growing up as a child, mm-hmm. and you know, you're told, well, you have this one life, right. You were born, you have X number of years, and you die, and then you go to heaven or right. hell.
Right.
And I never could understand how it really worked. Mm-hmm. Okay, if God loves everybody,
right.
then why doesn't everybody have the good life that I had as a child?
Right.
You know, whose parents bought her, you know, horses and, you know, all
yeah,
this
sure.
great stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the main difference, is learning that we each have the life that we have created, maybe over many lifetimes, that each lifetime provides us opportunities for new and different experiences, for maybe correcting things that mm-hmm. maybe didn't work in a previous life, and now they mm-hmm. work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, because I do think that karma plays a big role in it.
Yeah.
I've always been told that you can't believe in reincarnation unless you believe in karma, mm-hmm. because the two kind of go hand in hand. And I think there's a lot of nuances in mm-hmm. both of those things that I think people don't take the time to really study and meditate upon and look at the various Eastern traditions and how they put those things together. It doesn't happen just automatically. It takes a lot of study and a lot of contemplation and meditation to get some of these answers so that they really jive with, mm-hmm. you know, what you're trying to put together.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, what I've always, when I see horrible things happen to really good people, you know, I'm using the term good, but people that, and you ask the question, why, you know, the only thing that has ever brought me any kind of understanding is, well, maybe this soul chose those lessons for this lifetime. And it's something yeah. that I just can't understand, because that's the only thing that makes sense. Because like you, why right. would God give me a wonderful childhood and let another person grow up in an abusive, terrible childhood, you know, if God loves
right.
us all? So that's the only thing that makes me stop and go, you know, there's more to
yeah.
the story that I
there
don't
is.
Understand.
Mm-hmm. Always, yes. And I think we're very limited, really,
mm-hmm.
in what we can understand. I mean, we have a hard time understanding our own lives, much less trying
right.
to figure out the rest of the world, you know.
Right. That's so true. Yeah, right? We're still, so your last breath, you're still trying to figure things out. I love that lady. That lady, I'm not going to stop thinking about what you said about the lady who didn't believe. And then every night, all our relatives and friends were visiting her. That's great. We're going to come up to a break in a second, but I just want to ponder this before. You, and I thought this was really interesting. You said, well, pain is physical. Suffering is primarily mental. And suffering is not from external sources. It's an internal feeling of rejection of our experience, that this shouldn't be happening to me. So how can we learn to break the bond with suffering as part of having a good life and ultimately a good death? And I thought that's so true, because you're right. Suffering really is very mental. We allow ourselves, we choose suffering a lot of the times. But before you
yeah.
start sharing with us your thoughts on that, we're at our second point in the show where we're going to take our second break. So let's do that now, and then we'll come back and we'll finish this conversation. Very interesting. Stay tuned, everyone. Welcome back. So, Claire, you said that pain is physical and suffering is primarily mental, and suffering is not from an external source. It's an internal feeling of rejecting our experience, that this shouldn't be happening to me. And I was thinking about that because that's so true. Like how many times that I have something has happened and I'll say, this shouldn't be happening to me. And then, right? Well, who should it be happening to? Right?
Right. Like Nancy Kerrigan laying on the floor going, why me? Why me?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Why not? Remember that? Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Like, yes, I do remember that. So how do we break that suffering bond? Because I think a lot of people are addicted to suffering. They won't admit it, but they talk about their problems and they see it a lot. I see it a lot.
Right, right. I've actually heard a number of people say, you know, teachers, most recently a Hindu teacher that I really love, who said that people are more addicted to their suffering than they are their pleasure. Mm. People get, I think there's a lot of maybe the ego, why me, in suffering. And I think suffering is a choice to a great degree. In Buddhism, it's said that attachment is the root of all suffering. Mm-hmm. And I think and again, here's where non-attachment comes into play. And that is, if you get attached to the way things should be, ought to be, mm-hmm. You're going to suffer because right. things should not be this way.
Mm-hmm.
So if you practice non-attachment, you're more likely to be able to allow those feelings of rejection of the way things are to disappear. Mm-hmm. It's really the suffering comes when we reject what this is.
Right.
Instead of trying to find why this situation is what it is and what maybe are the lessons that we need to learn.
Mm-hmm. How good have you become at non-attachment?
Well, you know, I raised 4 kids, so mm-hmm. I'd like to think I'm pretty darn good at it. if you're not, you're not going to make it through this. Believe me.
Oh, my God. That's funny. Yeah.
Because you have to allow. Mm-hmm. It's just like people dying. And you say, oh, please don't die. You know, please, doctor, mm-hmm. save my loved one. Don't let them die.
Right.
You know, don't let this happen to my child. Don't, you know, you have mm-hmm. to be able to allow everybody's life to play out as it is meant to in their individual manifestation. Mm. If you get locked into every single drama and and wanting life to be exactly like you want it to be, and you want your children's lives to be exactly mm-hmm. what you thought they should be, and nobody should die, and you are going to just destroy yourself with this.
Yeah,
you're going to be suffering beyond belief.
Yeah,
but
no,
so you've
right.
got to learn to let that go. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And you talk about how crisis gives us an opportunity to grow spiritually, and if we can look at a crisis in that way, instead of looking at it as, oh, why me? I don't want this to happen, because that just creates more suffering. So how can we look at crises, I think is the correct way to say it, in a way like that?
Well, maybe we don't consider it to be a crisis, but, mm-hmm. you know, Brent's diagnosis of esophageal cancer, he didn't really consider that to be a crisis, as it was just another adventure in life.
Wow.
I think we label things, you know, oh, this mm-hmm. is a crisis. That's a crisis. I can't stand mm-hmm. this. I don't want that. And I think that's where we get into trouble with suffering, with the mental. It's the mental thing. I don't want this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want this to happen. I don't want my loved one to die.
Sure.
And we get involved in the drama. Our egos get involved in the drama. You know, it's ego with that attachment thing, the idea of permanence and and things should never change, and I should have the good life forever. And mm-hmm. I think that's the problem with suffering. It's more external in how we look at things, how we perceive. Maybe we perceive it as a crisis. Mm-hmm. You know, crisis is that can be, you know, if a teenager loses her cell phone, that's a crisis. And so you have to, you know, what mm-hmm. is a crisis? It's different for everybody.
Sure.
And so you have to, the way you perceive, the way you look at things, it's different for everybody. And not everything that we think is a crisis is really a crisis. Maybe it's just another adventure.
Maybe it's just another adventure. Yeah. And you talk about, you know, I mean, it's fear. It's everything, the fear of the unknown, the fear of what we don't know. And sure. You said something, you said you share a story from Harry Potter series. That's a wonderful in helping us to understand things we fear. So can you share with us? Harry Potter is like my favorite story of all time. So I have to ask you that question.
Right. Well, it really hit home to me. When Harry and his classmates were learning the ridiculous spell,
mm-hmm.
and they were instructed to conjure up the most frightening thing they could think of, the thing mm-hmm. they feared the most.
Right.
And so when, through their thoughts, they conjured up the thing of which mm-hmm. they were most frightened, and the thing appeared, and it was coming after them, they were then told to dispel that thing by pointing their wand at it and shouting, "Ridiculous!"
Mm-hmm.
And immediately, the thing they feared would disappear.
Mm-hmm.
So all fears, like all phenomena, you know, we know from the quantum sciences that all phenomena are created in the mind by the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so learning to dispel our fears is easy once we know that they're just part of the illusion that things on this level of consciousness have some kind of inherent reality that we can become attached to and hold on to forever.
Mm. So is that kind of what you mean when you say quantum physics and what quantum physics and Buddhism say about reality? Like we're creating reality
they're
in our mind.
Mm-hmm. Right. They're very parallel philosophies. It's been amazing. I've studied it for mm-hmm. about 15 years now, the parallels between quantum physics and Buddhism. And some people disagree with that. You know, they think, mm-hmm. well, you know, that's maybe making Buddhism too secular. But a number of books have been written about that, the parallels mm-hmm. between Buddhism and quantum physics. And yes, it's the whole idea that everything is created in the mind by the mind, mm-hmm. that we can affect our lives by how we think. And that's certainly not a brand new idea.
No, it's not. And science is catching up with it. There is actually studies that are now, which is really kind of nice. So you said something, you say realer reality. And what did Brent share with you in his last days? What's realer reality?
Well, I think what he meant was that he was actually seeing the illusion mm-hmm. of all the phenomena on this material plane.
Wow.
There were many times when he would be confused about mm-hmm. exactly where he was.
Mm-hmm.
We had the hospital bed out in the family room, and a lot of times he would call for me. I would be back here in my office, and mm-hmm. he would call for me, and you know, I'd go out and say, "Yes. Am I dead yet?"
Mm.
And I go,
No,
not yet. In fact, if you have to ask me whether or not you're dead, chances are you're not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but because there is a realer reality mm-hmm. in that this is illusion. It's real. It's just not real in the way we think it is. When you think of a magician, you know, mm-hmm. magicians, they are illusionists.
Right.
It's not that what they're doing isn't real. It's real. Mm-hmm. It's not real in the way we think it's real. Mm-hmm. There is a realer reality that's outside this realm that shows us the illusion
mm-hmm.
that we have experienced on this level of consciousness. Yeah. And suddenly things seem not to matter much anymore.
Right. So did you witness him? Did you feel like he was between both worlds there at the end?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Because wow. I've heard that from other people, that they can see
it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's incredible. Where they're just kind of leaving, you know? It's, mm-hmm. Things here just are mm-hmm. becoming, you know, less and less meaningful. And it's like you're ready to go on.
So what can you offer us to prepare for a peaceful death? What should we be thinking about? What should we be doing? And how can we help our loved ones?
Well, I think one of the good ideas that I try to practice every day, and that is remember death. Mm-hmm. Death is right on our shoulder, sitting mm-hmm. right there. Often said in a Buddhist class that I attended over a period of a number of years, death is certain, the time of our death is uncertain. Mm-hmm. So we have to always remember death, and that it's not horrible, it's not terrible, mm-hmm. Learning to die is a good thing. You can die fearlessly. You don't have mm-hmm. to be fighting it. You don't have mm-hmm. to be afraid of it. It's just a flip of the switch. It's just mm-hmm. moving from being manifest in this physical vehicle to being unmanifest, but still manifest on another mm-hmm. level of reality. Mm-hmm. And I think that the problem is we just really, really struggle with mm-hmm. what is reality, which is why I've spent so many years reading about reality mm-hmm. in not only Eastern philosophies, but in quantum sciences. It's been really helpful, very helpful. I would recommend that to everybody. Just start looking at that, contemplate it, meditate on it. It's amazing.
Yeah, well, we only have a couple of minutes left, so is there anything that we didn't cover that you really think that people should know listening to you today?
Well, I think the one thing that Brent left me with that I would like to leave with people, and that is just a few hours before he died, he was just kind of talking to me with his eyes closed, and he said, you know, dying is easy. He said, it's really easy. He said, I thought it would be so much harder than this, but it's not. It's really easy. And that was kind of the last thing he left me with. And I thought, wow, what a great gift to have been given, that it's really easy. And I think that maybe we need to remember that and remember that we can die fearlessly. We can die with ease and grace and dignity and not be afraid.
Wow, what a gift. Those words, that's pretty powerful for that to be the last thing that he said to you. That's, oh my Lord, wow. it just gave me goosebumps when you said that. We don't think of it as that. Of course, we want to hold on, you know, as tight as possible to our loved ones, because we don't, even though it's like you said, it's they're just unmanifesting in this physical form to manifest somewhere else. We don't want to detach from them, you know, and we have to let them go for a little while. And that's why I think what's so hard for us. Like if you could still call up your loved ones like on Skype and said, yeah, you know, okay, we're going to meet at this time. I think it wouldn't be so terrible, because it does feel like a finality. And what I loved about your book is it's, you're sharing how it's not a finality, you know? So I really, really love that. I really love that.
Well, good. I'm glad you found it, you know, helpful.
Yes. And for any of you listening who is dealing with somebody who is suffering a terminal illness, or if you know, you've lost somebody, this book is really has a lot to give you comfort. That's what I think. So yeah, please check her out, her book. And you can find it. Where can you find your book, Claire? I know you can find it on your website, ClaireGoldsberry.com, but is it, it's listed on all the bookstores, right? Audible.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All there. Amazon.
Any of your favorite booksellers. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I so appreciate you sharing your wisdom with me us today. Yeah, it was really, really great. Things to think about, people, really. Dying is just part of living, and how we can die with ease, right? Who would have thought? Yeah. It's that easy. Thank you, Claire, for being here. Okay, guys. Thanks for listening to Postcards to the Universe with Melissa, creating the life you crave. And I'm wishing everyone a wonderful week filled with joy, abundance, and love. Peace.